Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing from a local man whose hobby is devising quiz programmes for television, and he's had some success in the field. We'll also be finding out about the forthcoming art season in Rottingdean, and we'll be hearing about an organisation that goes by the intriguing name of Men in Sheds. As usual, we'll be giving out various phone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme. So you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing from our TV quiz designer. Here's Maya Davis.
At some time or another, I'm sure we've all caught an episode of a daytime or tea time quiz programme. There are lots of different ones. I won't bother to go and list them all. I've probably missed some out anyway. But you might be wondering who dreams up these formats and how they get aired. Well, one person who knows some of the answers is Shoreham resident Colin Johnson. And he's with me today. So welcome, Colin. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Now, tell me, how did your interest in quiz devising actually start?
Well, back in the 80s, I was sitting watching a quiz one day. I've always enjoyed watching quizzes on TV. And I was sitting there and I thought to myself, anyone could do this. You don't need any special training or any special qualifications. It's not like being a brain surgeon where you have to go away to college for 7 years and stuff. Anyone can invent a TV quiz format. And I don't see why I shouldn't, because I reckon I've seen enough quizzes and I understand what's involved. So I had it in mind to do that. And then one day I was having a drink with a friend at lunchtime, and he told me that he knew Don McLean, the Brummie comedian. And Don was looking for a new quiz show as a way of getting back on television. And I think I'd probably had a pint or two to drink, because I said, oh, I'll invent one for him. But that gave me a purpose, and I did invent one, and I did get to show it to Don.
And what happened?
Well, he loved it. He thought it was ideal just as it was. I'd done a little mock-up on my Amstrad computer, and he loved it. And he said, you know, let's try and get someone interested in it. And I said, how do you do that? Because I don't know. I assumed he did, because he was very experienced in TV, and he claimed that he did. He told me later on he hadn't a clue. but he arranged for us to meet one or two people in ITV, and they were quite complimentary about it, but said that there just wasn't a slot, an opportunity at that time. And then he got a chance to meet the head of Light Entertainment at BBC Television at the Television Centre. And he said that he liked it, but he thought it was a daytime quiz. And he rang up his friend Dave Ross, who ran quizzes for daytime. And Dave took one look at it, and he loved it too. So this is all going quite swimmingly. And he said he was going to put a series of 12 programmes on, and we thought this was wonderful. I thought he would probably want to do a pilot, but he said, no, can't afford a pilot. We'll do a series of 12.
And it just ran like that?
Well, it might have done. What actually happened was about a week or so later, he rang me up and said he'd changed his mind.
Oh, how disappointing.
Which was very disappointing. But he then said, I don't want 12, I want 32.
Ah.
And that's actually what happened. And they produced a series of 32 programmes, which went out in almost exactly 25 years ago to the day, March 1993.
Good grief. And what was that quiz called?
So it was called First Letter First.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the contestants had a keyboard, and the question was asked, and they had to press the first letter of the answer on the keyboard.
Right.
And then they got to collect the letters, and then they had to make them into a word of four letters or more. Okay. And that was the basic idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
There were one or two other bits and pieces, but it seemed to work quite well.
How did you go about devising that format then?
Well, I was on holiday in France, and I was thinking about Countdown and the fact that I like word games and anagrams. And then I don't quite know where I got the switch to the idea of the first letter of the answer coming in, but it was basically by thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And with any of these quizzes, you've got to have that sort of big idea, but it's then a lot of work in actually devising the different rounds and sample questions and everything else.
So what do you think are the characteristics of a good format?
Ah, well, it has to be simple. It has to be very easy to understand. It has to be entertaining. It has to be distinctive. And I think perhaps the most important thing is it has to be fun to play along with.
Mm. So you devise your formats based on those ideas, and how do you then try them out?
Well, a lot of people, I think, pitch the ideas without trying them out, but I always feel it's important to try them out, and I try them out with friends. Most of my friends are quite used to being given a call and asked if they'd like to come along and try something out, and most of them do it in good humour.
And what happens after that? You try it out for the first time with friends, and then...
And then you usually get some feedback, and as a result of that feedback, I need to change it, so I need to do another run-through. And that whole process can take months, if not years, to get it right. That's not the way it happened with the first quiz. With the first quiz, I got it pretty much right first time, and it all went through really well, and I thought, this is easy. And for the last 25 years, I've been trying to replicate that success, working very hard at a number of different quiz ideas, and not one of them has got on air.
Oh dear, so you haven't managed to sell any more formats?
No, I've had a lot of fun along the way, and I now regard it very much as about the journey rather than the destination. So I enjoy the process.
And what do your friends think about it?
Well, I mean, they seem to enjoy it, and they seem to think that there's something there. And most of my friends are not afraid to say if there are bits they don't like, which is actually helpful.
Hmm.
As long as they don't overdo it. And most of them seem to be willing to come back and do it more than once, so presumably they are interested in the experience.
You say none of them's actually got to air. Have you had any nibbles from anyone?
Well, I had a lot of interest in a format I invented about 10 years ago, which is called Vicious Circle. That basically is based on the idea of a board game. You have a circle of contestants on the floor, each on their own spot, and as they get a question right, they move forward, and if they land on another player, they kind of take that player and they get eliminated from the game.
Ooh.
And that was the basic idea behind Vicious Circle.
That does sound vicious.
It does, doesn't it? Yes. And that would have been quite interesting visually, I think. And it certainly caught a lot of people's imagination. We showed it to a lot of broadcasters, and we had varying amounts of interest. Mm. And there was a production company who thought it was a real winner because it was very distinctive. We took it to the industry exhibition in Cannes.
Ooh.
Which was good fun. So like the Cannes Television Festival. I got to do a bit of jetting around to different countries, showing it to them. You got to Dubai, for example, and Barcelona.
Excellent. When you say we, who's we?
Me working with a TV production company.
Oh,
because
I see.
Basically, someone like myself doesn't go directly to a broadcaster. I need to go through and with a TV production company.
And how do you find that production company?
There are lists online of different production companies, and I usually get on the phone and ring up and say, who's your creative director? Can I come and see you and show my idea? And usually they're very receptive because they need new ideas.
Oh, right. Okay. So what do you enjoy most about devising these formats?
there are kind of three phases.
Mm-hmm.
And the first phase is where I'm working on my own at home, where I've got total control and developing different ideas and trying them out. The second phase is where I'm working with a TV production company, where they will have their ideas and they're in control, and I've sort of had to give up my baby, but I can see it's looking prettier as a result.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pitching to TV companies, and then hopefully it gets accepted, and then the third phase is production. I was lucky enough with First Letter First to actually be in the studio working on it during the recording of all the different shows, and that was the most exciting thing.
Right. Do you think it's important to have prizes in these competitions?
It depends on the type of quiz, because if you talk about quizzes like Mastermind and Only Connect, which are very challenging and difficult quizzes, then it really isn't about the prizes at all. At the other end of the spectrum, you have the mindless game shows, and that's very often all about the money. And in the middle, you have the accessible general knowledge quiz shows, which is the sort that I'm interested in. And I don't think it matters very much. I mean, you know, very often the prize is £1,000 or something, and it's not really for the prize, it's for the honour of winning.
Mm, I see. Now, you mentioned accessible quiz shows. Does that mean that that's the sort of question you ask?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Now, have you ever actually run a quiz yourself?
Oh, this is something I do as a hobby. I've been running quizzes for 20 or 30 years for local clubs and charities.
Okay, so what's the largest one you've ever run then?
The largest one was, I can remember the date exactly because it's an unusual date. It's the 29th of February 1996.
Okay.
Which was the year of the Olympics, of course. And it was in the days before lottery-funded Olympics. And so the British Olympic Appeal needed to raise funds. And I ran a quiz for them. And we had 64 teams of four. We had exactly 256 contestants.
Where was this?
This was in the Arts Centre at Stratford-upon-Avon. That was good fun.
What do you enjoy most? Setting, devising, taking part, asking the questions?
I definitely enjoy asking the questions more than answering the questions. Mainly because when I'm asking the questions, I have the answer in front of me and I can be in control of the whole process. But I love devising quizzes as well.
Do you have any ambitions now, apart from obviously getting a quiz on the telly again?
Well, that's the big ambition. And I would just love to be in the studio seeing my show being broadcast. And that's the driving force behind what I do, much more than any money I might make out of it. But it's about the journey, the whole process. I love devising the quizzes. I love programming them. I love trying them out with friends, showing them off to production companies. So, no, that keeps me very happy.
Well, that sounds as though you've got an awful lot to keep you going for a very long time.
I think so.
It keeps your brain active too, I would think.
Well, that's another thing, yes. It's got to be useful from that point of view.
Well, that's an interesting insight into the world of devising quizzes. Thank you very much, Colin.
That's a great pleasure.
Maya Davis was talking to Colin Johnson about his lifetime hobby of creating quizzes for television. Well, now we join our Rotting Dean correspondent, Chris Seymour. And on this occasion, he's talking to Roy Wales about the arts in Rotting Dean.
No spring festival this year in Rotting Dean for Rotting Dean Arts, but still a lot of events going on. First one, June the 3rd.
Yes, well, the programme this year, whilst we haven't got a festival, divides into two. And the first section is the free concerts on the terraces, which run through, as you say, from early June right through to August Bank Holiday Sunday. And the second part of the season is four concerts after the bank holiday in September, October and November. And we have other events then. But the three concerts on the terraces start on June the 3rd with a brass group, which we've had many times before, an excellent small brass group, Brass Fusion. And Then we go on to a theatre company, a theatre group presenting Frankenstein. Last year they did a wonderful performance of Othello, Shakespeare's Othello, and they're coming back this year, a fresh production, slightly modern and reimagining production of this Frankenstein work. And then we move on to Lambeth Wind Orchestra from London. And, of course, the stage particularly suits large concert bands because of the sound. And they're about a 50-piece concert band who've been once before and were excellent, very popular programme on July the 1st. All these concerts are on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then we go on to possibly the most popular group we've ever had on this terraces stage. It's a fourth visit, and it's the Vox Beatles coming on July the 22nd. And they're performing a lot of Beatles classics and have attracted the largest crowds ever. And they're an excellent group, and so we're very pleased to have them back. And another old friend comes back on August the 5th, which is the Brighton Big Band, who produce their own swing band music and program, including some of the well-known pieces that we know from the Miller and the other people's era. So we're looking forward to that. So that brings us up to the last weekend with the Dixieland Stompers with Trad Jazz on Sunday, August the 26th, and that takes care of the Summer Terraces program.
And then we move into the Village Hall.
We do. I must say that if it ever rains on the Sunday afternoon terraces concerts, we either move into the Village Hall or into the church. So the concerts will take place, whatever the weather, which is always doubtful in the summer. But yes, we start off with the Berlin to Bacharach on August the 25th, the Saturday, the August bank holiday weekend, from a group called the Jazz Repertory Company. And they've been presenting three concerts so far in the Village Hall. Two of them were 100 Years of Jazz, and excellent, excellent group, top national performers. And this year they're doing a slightly different program, Berlin to Bacharach, featuring Pete Long and Georgina Jackson and many other top jazz players. So we're looking forward to that. It's a concert not to be missed. It's on August the 25th.
And then a very, very dear favourite of ours comes along to the Village Hall on September the 15th.
Yes, it's amazing how popular jazz is in the Village, and we've been putting on these concerts now for almost 10 years. And Herbie has become a well-known favourite here in Rottingdean, as he is in many other places. So he's coming back, Herbie Flowers, with his All-Stars Band, as you say, on September the 15th at 7:30. It's a Saturday night. And we're looking forward to him coming back. Such a character and a great musician.
Two more events to go, first of which is Classics for Pleasure.
Yes, well, this is an orchestral concert, small chamber orchestras from Germany, who've been with us before, and they're presenting a very popular programme of Vivaldi, Albinoni, Bach and Elgar in the Village Hall in October, early October. And then we end the season in November, actually late November, November the 24th, in the Village Hall with Opera and Musicals Dinner with four singers from Vocalissimo. We've had these opera and musical dinners over the years, and the dinner is cooked by a wonderful French chef we have in the Village, Frank Tomeret, who produces superb food, and of course we have some wonderful music as well. So that's always a sell-out performance, and that'll end our season for this year.
Roy, thank you very much.
Chris Seymour was talking to Roy Wales about Rottingdean Arts. If you'd like to get more information and find out how to buy tickets, you can go to their website, which is at rottingdeanarts.org.uk. That's Rottingdean Arts, spelt all as one word, .org.uk. There's an email address, which is info@rottingdeanarts.org.uk. And there's a telephone number, which is Brighton 300894. That's 01273 300894. Now, our next item is one that was first broadcast in August of last year, and it concerns an organisation called Men in Sheds. There are quite a number of Men in Sheds groups operating all over the country, and there are several in the Brighton and Hove area. There's one in Kemp Town, and we thought that we'd find out more about that particular Kemp Town branch. Its lead facilitator is James Gaston, and he came into our studio to tell us all about it. I began by asking him to tell us what Men in Sheds is.
Men in Sheds isn't an organisation as such. It's an idea which started in Australia and has now spread around the world. They're just spaces where men, usually older men, can come together and socialise and make things. Usually carpentry and joinery, but some sheds might specialise in electronics or more creative, like artistic pursuits. But our shed at the moment is primarily focused on woodwork.
And why is there a need for an organisation like this?
Well, older men, especially maybe retirees or widowers, might not have a social outlet and they might be less willing to look for something. I think women maybe are more inclined to socialise and meet with other women in a social setting, but it's easier for men, maybe when they're not working anymore or when they find themselves on their own, just to sort of stay that way and get stuck in a rut. So we just provide a space where they can come and do something practical and useful if they want to, but there's no requirement. If they just want to sit and chat to other men, then they're very welcome to do so.
So it's a way for getting older men to socialise, really?
Yes. And I should say that it's not exclusively for older men. We have some members in their 20s and 30s, although the majority of the men we've had sign up so far have been sort of 50-plus and retirees. And actually, it's not exclusively for men either, despite the name. We haven't had any women members sign up, but we are very open to that. And other sheds that I've visited nearby, also in the southeast, they might have the Men in Sheds name, but they also accept female members. So it is an inclusive space. One of the first questions people ask when they hear the name is, oh, so are women not invited? And they are.
And of course, the other bit of the name is the activities don't necessarily take place in a shed, do they?
No, we have two spaces. We have a room in Leech Court, which is a senior housing scheme in Kemp Town. And then about 5 minutes walk away, we have a little workshop in Brighton Youth Centre. Leech Court, we tend to do stuff with hand tools and lighter work because we're limited in the tools we can use there and sort of the amount of mess and noise we can make. So that tends to be more of a social space because we're right next to a kitchen and sort of a lounge area. So there's lots of tea and coffee and biscuits at Leech Court and talking about making things and some making. But the meat of the work happens at Brighton Youth Centre, where we have bench-mounted tools and power tools and dust extraction and sort of the space to make a mess.
And at Leech Court, you have disabled access, but not at the Brighton Youth Centre?
Yes, unfortunately. So the Brighton Youth Centre shed is up a flight of stairs of 18 steps, and there's stairs to get just to get into the building at the main entrance as well. So it's not wheelchair accessible. But the Leech Court shed is. And during term times, we often visit Brighton College, which is just down the road. And their design and technology workshop, which is the space that we use, is really big and really well equipped with anything you could need, basically. And it's fully wheelchair accessible.
I see. So you can only go there during the school term. I would have thought it would be the other way around.
No, we work with a group of students there. They have a very good community service program, and they have various groups of students who work with good causes in and around Kemp Town, and we're one of the causes that they work with. So when we go and visit them, the students and a teacher will be in the space and working with us. And we'll either collaborate on a project or we'll all be sort of doing our own thing. But it's still a social space.
Your group is based in Kemp Town, but I gather there are various other groups throughout the Brighton and Hove area.
Yes, so I'm not sure what stage they've reached. I've spoken to guys from the Hangleton and Knoll and the Molescombe Sheds. And as far as I know, they're still setting up. They're either looking for premises or they've just secured premises. They're securing tools and looking for funding. I don't think they're up and running yet. Our shed is funded by Brighton and Hove City Council. So we got lucky in that regard. And they've been very generous, actually. When we started the whole process, maybe 18 months ago, we were, I think, the only shed in progress in Brighton at that point. So it's really encouraging that other people are sort of trying to set up their own sheds like elsewhere in Brighton, because we can't serve the whole city ourselves. So it'd be nice if there was a network of sheds sort of spread throughout Brighton and Hove.
And are all the groups autonomous, or is there an overall organisation that...
There's an organisation called the UK Men's Shed Association, and when you set up your own shed, you can become a member, and then you get onto the website, and you get a newsletter, and they can offer support and guidance. But it's not really an organisation in and of itself. It's kind of just a concept which people can run with themselves and implement in their own way. So quite a few of them in the UK are run by Age UK, but not all of them.
So it is possible for a group just to do their own thing and not be part of the overall organisation?
Yes, but I think it's beneficial to join the Men's Shed Association for promotional reasons and being part of a network of sheds.
What's your position in the organisation?
I work for Fabrica, I should explain. So Fabrica is a contemporary art gallery in Brighton, in the Lanes. They made an application for funding to Brighton and Hove City Council to set up a men's shed. I was volunteering at Fabrica when that process began, and I have had experience working in an arts and crafts context with older people, with adults, like teaching them. I also have experience of carpentry and joinery. I was self-employed as a carpenter for 5 years before I moved to Brighton. So when the project got going, they approached me and asked me if I'd be interested, because they knew it was sort of relevant to my experience and my interests. And I said, yes, I'd be delighted. So I'm the lead facilitator. That's my role. At Men in Sheds, and Claire Hankinson, who is the audience development manager at Fabrica, is the project manager.
I think you said that your shed specialises in carpentry, is that right?
Yes, it does. We don't currently have the facilities to do anything else. We've had interest from sort of artists and makers in using the space, and I'd like to get them along for things like lino cutting or woodblock printing. But at the moment, we're just working in wood. We tend to make things for local good causes. And people who approach us and maybe say, oh, we need this. Could you make it for us for a small donation? And we're happy to do that. So as we started out in Leech Court, our first few jobs were making things for Leech Court. So we made shelves for the communal kitchen. We repaired some wooden furniture in the communal spaces. And then residents saw us doing that and then started approaching us and asking us if we could make things for their flats. So we've made shelves for people's flats. Someone working in the cafe at Patching Lodge, who are our neighbours, asked if we could make them a door for their cafe counter. So we did that. We've repaired benches at Leech Court and at Brighton Youth Centre. So it tends to be that either we see something that needs doing and then we fix it ourselves, or someone from an organisation that we're associated with will approach us and say, could you do this for us? The members also make things for themselves. One of our members is a keen artist and he's made picture frames to put his work up on the wall. One of our members has made a bird feeder and one of those insect hotels for his garden.
So it's not just socialising and making things for yourself, but you're actually doing useful things for the community.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a large part of the appeal of the shed, is getting the satisfaction of building something with your own two hands and then knowing that it's going to be useful and that it's appreciated.
Is it possible for somebody to come along to the shed and learn a new skill? For example, I have never done carpentry. If I wanted to learn carpentry, could I come along to the shed and learn it there?
Yes, you'd be very welcome. The majority of our members and of the people who've expressed interest in joining the shed have little, if any, experience of carpentry and joinery, but they're more than welcome. I mean, I said people aren't obliged even to do any woodwork when they're in the space. We have the space and I'm on hand and we have the tools. And if people want to make, then I would love them to, but it's not a prerequisite for joining the shed. If somebody wants to try something new or learn a specific technique, if I don't know how to do it and if one of our other members doesn't know how to do it, then we can find out, we can research it. Our setup at the moment, Brighton Youth Centre, it is quite modest, but it's flexible. In theory, we can do quite a lot there. So to answer your question, yes, we welcome people who want to learn but have no formal skills.
And some of your members, no doubt, will have skills that they've picked up during their working life and are happy to pass on.
Certainly. So John, who I've mentioned a couple of times, who is a retired carpenter, quite often I defer to him because he had 30 years' experience. So if there's something I'm not entirely sure how to do, or I've only done a couple of times and I'm still feel a little bit uncertain, I'll just ask him. And that's really, really useful to have people like John around. The idea is that it's a space for skill sharing and for learning.
James Gaston was telling me about Men in Sheds. Well, after speaking to James, I was keen to see for myself what went on at their meetings. So the following day, I went down to join them at the Brighton Boys Club, taking my colleague Colin Vincent with me. While we were there, we spoke to a couple of the members, and Colin started off by speaking to John. Now, John was the expert carpenter that James was referring to at the end of that interview, so it was no surprise that when Colin asked John what his trade had been when he was working, he answered this way.
I was a carpenter.
And what sort of work do you do as a carpenter?
Construction carpentry, mainly. Fitting roofs, doing the first and second fixings in the buildings, on new estates, any sort of building work, really.
And you've retired from that?
Yes.
From that now? Okay. Yes. When did you first start in Men in Sheds?
I think about 6 months ago.
You live on your own?
Yes.
Yeah. Does this help in terms of alleviating social isolation for you?
I suppose it helps in that way. I hadn't really thought about it before, but it came along and I thought, I'd do that, you know. Mm-hmm. Do something, and I'm going to say, put something back at the same time.
And I understand that work can be done at Leech Court.
Well, we're limited as to what we can do in Leech Court because of the noise factor. And I think health and safety as well. Uh-huh. But we have been doing shelves in people's houses, so we can construct them here and then take them to Leech Court and then fit them in there. So we're using both, really.
You mentioned artwork.
Yes, I do art as well. I have been doing art before I started the woodwork. I had been studying interior design a few years ago, and that's how I got into art. I'm making some picture frames myself.
And what form does that take, then? Is it painting?
Painting. Right. Yeah, well, the others... No, I don't like the other ones. Just painting for me, thanks.
And have you had exhibitions, or...?
Well, the art class has exhibitions in Patching Lodge at the end of every term.
After Colin had spoken to John, James showed us the array of equipment that they have in their very small workshop. You've got a little workshop here. Seems to be quite well equipped. What sort of tools have you got here?
So for the space, we do have quite a bit of stuff. So here's a bandsaw, which was donated to us by the Broadstairs shed. We have a lathe, which is a very small lathe. You couldn't make much bigger on it than an egg cup. But still, we've got quite a lot of use out of it. We've made coat pegs and doorknobs and stuff. That was donated by my father, who's a carpenter and joiner. We have a mitre saw, which is brand new. We bought that and a couple of other tools with some money we were awarded by the Homerty Trust. We also got a a skill saw and a jigsaw with that money, which are elsewhere in the space. And then we have quite a lot of hand tools, and many of those have been donated by people who've heard about us and couldn't make use of them anymore. And we've taken them off their hands. And some of them have needed a little bit of fixing up, sort of sharpening or cleaning, but that's fine. We can do that and give them a new lease of life. And they'll be put to very good use.
You're certainly very well equipped here. It's only a small room, but it's bulging with tools and workbenches.
Yes, we do. We quite often have to do a bit of rearranging. When we want to sort of change what we're doing and use a different tool, we might have to sort of take something off the bench and set something else up. But it works.
James, you welcome further donations, presumably, of equipment?
Yes, we do, of equipment and of materials. It's a little bit tricky because it is quite a small space, so I have to be quite selective about what I can take. But so far, the people who have donated, they've been quite good quality tools, which we can definitely make use of.
I then took the opportunity to speak to one of the founder members of the group. You're Roger Small, is that right?
I'm Roger Small. I live in Leech Court, and I'm a widower, and I'm aged 79.
Oh, you're doing very well. You don't look 79, if I may say so.
I feel it in the mornings quite often.
I know what you mean. So how long have you been a member of this group, then?
Just over a year from the concept. We started in Leech Court, actually, and we've been using the Brighton College workshop on Wednesdays. But now we've opened this unit here in the youth centre, and this is much better, unit for us.
It's got good facilities here, has it?
It's improving all the time, yeah. We've been getting equipment as we go along.
What sort of equipment have you got now, then?
Well, it's mainly woodworking equipment. Got a lathe and some different saws, which makes my life much easier than the hand tools, anyway.
And it's mainly woodworking that goes on here, is it?
At the moment, it's mainly woodworking, yeah. I'm sure James could facilitate other skills within that. But at the moment, that's as far as we progress.
Are you particularly good at woodwork?
Not especially. I'm just a general DIY. I was a fitter years ago, so I'm quite handy in that respect.
So you're the sort of person who can turn their hand to anything, really?
I can try. I can try.
Why did you join Men in Sheds in the first place?
I'm a widower and on my own, and it occupies my time, plus the social side, meeting up with different people.
So it's not just about making things here, there's a definite social aspect to it as well, is there?
Oh yeah, the tea and biscuits come in very handy.
Are there any people who just come for the tea and biscuits?
I don't think there is actually at the moment, no, but there's no reason why not. There's no reason why not at all.
I gather you've had your picture in the press just recently.
In the Home and Inn magazine, which is for the senior housing. Yeah, we're trying to advertise the fact that we're here, and we just want people to come and join in and make this useful.
Have you had much response from that?
We've had a little bit more response, yeah, and we did ask for anybody and any old tools and equipment that they don't use anymore, and we've had a few donations in that respect.
Finally, I spoke to James again to find out how new members can join the group. If people are interested in joining the shed, how should they go about it?
They can email me at meninsheds@fabrica.org.uk, or they can call Fabrica directly on 01273 778 646, and one of the members of staff will answer the phone, and if you mention Men in Sheds, then they'll know exactly what you're talking about. And if I'm in the gallery, then they'll pass you over to me. If not, then they'll take your details and let me know, and we will then be in touch.
Okay, and the email address, is that Meninsheds typed all as one word?
It's all one word, all lowercase, @fabrica.org.uk.
And is there a website that people can look at?
We have a blog on medium.com. So if you just Google Medium Kemptown Men in Sheds, we should be the first, if not second result. Or if you just want to type it straight in to your browser, it's medium.com/men-in-sheds.
James Gaston, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Richard.
I was talking to James Gaston about Men in Sheds. If you want to contact Men in Sheds, you can send them an email, and the address is meninsheds@fabrica.org.uk. Or you can phone them on Brighton 778646. And it's the last item in our programme today. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part, and especially my colleague Sarah Elgrew, who's been helping out with the operation on today's programme. And of course, I want to thank you once again for listening. So until we meet again, this is Richard Davis wishing you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production.